Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2024, JPMorgan Chase & Co. The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Pushkin. Hey, Lost Hills listeners, it's Dana. I wanted to let you know that you can hear the entire new season of Lost Hills ad-free, along with other great binge listens, by becoming a Pushkin Plus subscriber. Find Pushkin Plus on the Lost Hills show page in Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm/plus. I'm at Duke's Restaurant in Malibu. It's perched on the rocks right above the ocean. Out front is a giant statue of legendary Hawaiian surfer and swimmer Duke Kahanamoku, who helped introduce surfing to California in the early part of the 20th century. This is where Gidget, the real Gidget, works.
Hey, we're here to interview Kathy.
Kathy
Connor. She's a hostess.
Gidget.
Yeah, Gidget.
Yeah. Find her.
Cool. Thanks.
Gidget's real name is Kathy Koner Zuckerman. The summer of 1956, when she was 15, she hung out at the beach in Malibu. She befriended Mickey Dora and Tube Steak, who was later given the name the Big Kahuna. She fell in love. But most of all, she learned to surf. And her stories became the basis for the original Gidget, a novel written by Frederick Koner, her dad. It's hard to overstate the cultural impact of Gidget. When the book was released in 1957, it hit the LA Times bestseller list, ahead of Jack Kerouac's On the Road. It went on to sell 500,000 copies. But the book was only the beginning. In 1959, Gidget was adapted for film, with Sandra Dee as Gidget.
What in the world is a Gidget? It's a girl, a cuddling, befuddling teen, who set out to find her a man of her own, and found seven young beachcombers with a single thought, to enjoy life and love without working. Meet Kahuna, their leader.
Sequels follow. Gidget goes Hawaiian. Gidget goes to Rome. Gidget grows up. Gidget gets married. Gidget's summer reunion. It was also a TV show, starring a then-unknown Sally Field as Gidget. Today, Kathy works as a kind of informal celebrity host at Duke's. She seats diners, chats with them, and signs copies of the Gidget novel. Around the corner from reception, there's a wall with some old photos of Kathy, including one of her with Mickey Dora.
Oh, wow, look at this. That's Kathy and Mickey. There's sort of a pack of dudes in the background, blurred out. Oh, here she comes. She's got a cute little flower in her hair.
The person coming toward me is tiny, with a big warm smile and a bunch of chunky necklaces around her neck. This is the person Mickey Doris says ruined Malibu. She's 82 and vibrant, and I'll just say, she doesn't feel much like a villain to me.
I just do high finance here because somebody made me a couple of really great photos of me, one at the shack and one so. I want one!
Kathy says she sometimes sells photos of herself as a teenager on the beach in Malibu to Duke's customers.
Gidget's always hustling. No, I love my guests, you know. So that's the shack.
That's amazing.
That's the original shack that, you know, where the big kahuna lived. I mean, that's... He was called Kahuna, by the way, but he lived in that shack. So that's me in front of the shack.
Kathy's shift is over, and the plan is for me to give her a ride back to her house in the Palisades.
Okay. Do you want to go?
Yeah.
So we'll drive you home.
Thank you. I have to clock off.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Bye.
Thank you.
Why don't you come around to the passenger side in the front?
As we head out of Malibu on Pacific Coast Highway, we start talking about what it was like for her when the Gidget movie came out in 1959.
When you're in college and the movie comes out, did people start to recognize you? And I know you weren't in
not
the movie.
Nobody recognizes me.
But did they make the connection between you and this famous movie?
Well, it wasn't famous when it came out. And I saw it at the Whiteside Theater in Corvallis, Oregon. And I wish you'd slow down a bit on PC.
Yeah, of course.
And I thought it was, it was like, oh my God, this is a movie about my life at Malibu. You know, obviously based on the book that my dad wrote.
Surfing, Kathy says, is completely different now from when she was a kid.
When I was surfing, there were no contests, no surf music, no surf clothing. It was all, that's what I loved so much about it. It was way off dead center. I was the tomboy. I was the kids would write in my annual when I graduated, good luck with your water skiing. You know, they didn't know what surfing was,
With the phenomenal success of Gidget, the weird little boho scene that was happening on the beach in Malibu became instantly pop culture. Malibu got overrun. Mickey was furious. And in his mind, and the minds of all those dudes who worshipped the ground Mickey walked on, Gidget became the one who ruined everything. I'm Dana Goodyear, and this is Lost Hills. Episode 3, Gidget Goes to Hollywood, Part 1.
I believe Gidget was the trailblazer, yes.
Gidget ushered in the era of surfing as a pop culture phenomenon.
But the biggest thrill is surfboarding. The art of surfboarding is part of the Hawaiian culture.
Surf movies.
And then you got Beach Blanket Bingo. Ride the Wild Surf, Elvis Presley movies.
Got those Beach Boy
blues. Annette Funicello, because people say, oh, you're Annette Funicello? I'm like, no.
Take a look at those waves out there. Boy, you know there's nothing out there but you, the sea, the sky.
You make it sound good.
And I actually never watched any of those beach movies. I didn't ever watch a Frank the Avalon movie, Muscle Beach Party. I don't even know the names of them.
Ah, this is the life. Ah, didi. The sun and the surf. This is it.
Surf music.
It was an itchy, bitsy, teeny, weeny, yellow polka dot bikini.
The Beach Boys.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how.
Surf competitions.
And a good cut back that time by Donald Takeyama.
Surf brands.
There was no leashes. There was no wetsuits. There was no merchandising. I mean, who'd heard of surf clothing or Roxy or Quicksilver or Rip Curl or Hurley or any of these things, you know?
We're seeing today some of the world's finest surfers.
Surfing became a business.
Here we go. Kelly Slater looking for a 7-1-8. The doing go.
Before Gidget, there was just the waves and the beach and the birds and a few stray humans doing something very few people would credit as worthwhile. The early California surfers were iconoclasts. Some of them were teenagers ditching school. Some of them were disillusioned veterans of the Second World War. All of them were rejecting the clean-cut, dutiful stereotypes of the era.
I mean, even if you were a surfer, your parents wanted you to go to school, but we would rather go surfing. So we were kind of outcast, would be a best way of putting it, looked at differently.
This is Henry Ford, another early surfer who became a lifeguard at Malibu.
You probably weren't working as much as other people because you were bitten by the werewolf, as we call surfing. Surfing bit us. And it's like you, once you're bitten, you're stuck with it, you know?
Malibu has a number of surf spots. But when people say Malibu, they're usually talking about Surf Rider Beach. It's a beautiful wave that peels slowly to the right instead of breaking all at once. Malibu is so consistent, surfers call it the machine or the conveyor belt. That green, unbroken water, that was Mickey's canvas.
Malibu had a perfect right point. It's kind of like manufactured wave if you looked at it. They were perfect. And it was the right-hand point break, and it was put in the right place where the wind would blow down the coast. And so it offered everything. Good waves, good conditions, and unknown at that time. Because there were nobody else surfing. You'd drive by there, you'd see six people out. That would be it. That would be a big day in those early years.
Malibu was secluded, a private paradise. There were movie stars living in the Malibu Movie Colony, a group of houses clustered at one end of Surf Rider Beach.
There wasn't like a crowd that hung there every day. There were a few movie stars that would come down there in those early days. Guys like Peter Lawford, Richard Jekyll.
Other than that, there were a bunch of misfits.
It was, these characters, they were different because they were like the Old West or something. They were, there was a freedom because they were away from any kind of society. Once they entered the Malibu Beach, it was their domain.
Here's Denny Auberg again, the surfer who started going to Malibu in the 50s. Tagging along with his older brother, Kemp.
So you got down there and you saw all these different kinds of characters. They dressed like one guy just found an old beaver coat that washed up on the beach, and that became his surfing coat, full of holes and moth-eaten. And just people wore army jackets. It was kind of like improvisation. There was no technology for surfing. So people roped their board on their car with rope. There was no special wetsuits, And cut off jeans, a lot of people just cut off jeans for their trucks. So it was like the beginning infancy of the surf thing.
The characters at Malibu were basically beatniks and dropouts. Some of them were what we would now think of as homeless. At the start of the summer of 1956, one of them, Terry Tracy, a.k.a. Tube Steak, a.k.a. the Big Kahuna, decided he was just going to live on the beach and party nonstop with his friends. So he built himself a shack out of palm fronds. And that's where Kathy Koner, a 15-year-old whose parents had brought her to the beach, found him. And that's where she met Mickey Dora, the surfing god, the dark prince of Malibu.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. that comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings, that frustrating thing your mom does, or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/loss today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lost.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakeables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakeables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. JPMorgan Chase Bank, NA member, FDIC, copyright 2024. JPMorgan Chase & Co.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
After sitting in traffic on Pacific Coast Highway and then climbing up into the Palisades, we get to Kathy's house. It's a wooden ranch house, red with white trim, that she shares with her husband, Marv. A table just outside the front door is piled with abalone shells and sand dollars, and a wooden sign that says, "A beach girl lives here with her big kahuna."
I love your house. What year was it built?
I love my house, too. It's the 50s.
It's so great. You don't see too many houses that are original like this anymore in this neighborhood. Got a very kind of feeling to it. This is so cute. Oh my gosh.
Kathy leads me into a back bedroom, which looks like a museum of 1950s girlhood. She opens a drawer in a bedside table and pulls out two old books, which she clutches to her chest.
So these are the truths, Dana. These are my diary pages.
Oh, my God. Now she's going, look at those. Look at your sweet
diaries.
So
I had to look up where I wrote about Mickey Dora. Of course, I wrote it down. I can't find the... Oh, here it is.
Oh, my God. It's so great. Amazing. Amazing, amazing. I just love the way they look, too. My wonderful year.
Gidget's Diaries. The covers are faded pastel pink and green, and the spines are splitting apart with age. One of them shows a boy and a girl holding hands. "My Wonderful Year" is written in bubbly lowercase script. These are basically the golden tablets of the surf religion. This is where Kathy recorded everything that happened in the summer of 1956 when she learned to surf in Malibu.
I have written down in the diary, the first day I went surfing, and I'm happy to read it to you.
Love that, yeah.
June 24th, 1956, Sunday.
Dear diary, I didn't do too much but go to the beach. I didn't think I'd have fun, but I met Matt, and he took me out on his surfboard. He let me catch the waves by myself, and once I flew off and the board went flying in the air. I didn't get hurt at all. He also rode the waves with me. Then I rode the board in alone. The surf wasn't high at all. I hope Matt will take me surfing again. So that's the first entry about going surfing at Malibu.
Kathy lived about 15 miles away in Brentwood, but her parents were outdoorsy and they loved the beach. So she'd been going to Malibu since she was a baby. She was aware of surfing.
So there was a group of guys, you know, from 1948 or so, that my mom used to take a couple of those guys to the beach, to Malibu, and took the boards in the Rumble Sea. So my earliest recollection of those boards were when, you know, I was 8 or 9 years old. But we always went to Malibu. So I didn't stumble upon them. I saw them. I knew where they were. Usually they were in the pit. I remember them in the pit. That's when that was called the pit.
The pit was a spot in the sand along the wall by the entrance to the beach. It was where the cool kids hung out.
The pit seemed to be more hardcore surfers, men's club, you know, all about testosterone. I mean, a lot of them had nicknames. So there was somebody called the Fencer, the Kahuna, Quick Higgy. Frayne Higgison was called Quick Higgy. Well, see, Mickey was called DeCat.
The scene at the pit could be intimidating. Here's Denny Auberg again. He surfed with Mickey.
Everybody would laugh, and everybody would sit in the pit. You know, it was this area where kind of the bigger names, you know, the in crowd would sit. And surfers had to walk through that pit and be scrutinized, you know, like little beginners. And they'd throw pebbles at the board or yell something, just to kind of hassle them a little bit, you know.
A little farther up the beach was the shack, where Terry Tubestake Tracy lived.
Tubestake Tracy, who was the leader of the pack, but people would hang around his shack and old beat-up couches, you know, they'd just drag down an old car seat and lay it on the beach or an old chair, and it was very primitive, you know. And he would come out of his grass shack and you're spending the night, and I am the kahuna, you know. It was funny.
The big kahuna ruled the beach.
In fact, he would say, at Malibu, on the beach, it's me. In the water, it's Mickey Dora.
This was way before contests and rankings. But no one had to measure Mickey's dominance. It was self-evident.
You know, he was king of the water. You know, and that's in surfing, it wasn't because you won something. There was nothing to win. It's a funny sport. It was all by reputation, you know. It had a lot to do with the way your style in the water, how you did something magnificent, but you didn't really win a contest, but the reputation would grow because you just looked beautiful on a wave. People would notice that you just rode that wave so well. I mean, the wave's over, there's nothing left to show for it, unless it's on film. But people would remember, and they'd be their hero, you know, like they'd idolize these people that were so good. It's a funny sport like that.
Of course, Kathy noticed Mickey. Everyone did.
You know, he was dark and dark skin, dark hair, white trunks. I think I remember white trunks. He was a great surfer. He was a great surfer. I mean, you could pick him. If you looked outside, you could pick him up in a lineup. He was fantastic. He had hand gestures. I don't know if anybody saw. He goes, my name is Mickey Dora. He'd go like that.
Mickey makes frequent cameos in Kathy's diaries.
Jazzed on Mickey. He didn't kiss me, though. We drove into Palmdale, where Mickey went to meet these people who were going to take him to Mammoth. God, I wanted to go so badly. When I came home, I found a letter waiting for me from Dick. I called up Bill, and he told me that he, Lester, and Jesse, and Tubestake, were all going to Mammoth that night. I called up Jesse, but he had already left. Skiing was a big deal. I am completely jazzed, and I don't know on whom. So there were these series of male interests.
Kathy was, in her own description, completely boy crazy and very sporty. She didn't want to spend all day at the movies like the other girls she knew. She wanted to have adventures.
So Mickey would come over to the house and play ping pong. He would take me to the ski slopes, and I found it where he'd have me climb up the rope tow. So he didn't want to pay for a ski lift ticket.
Mammoth Mountain was only a few hundred miles north in Mono County.
Mickey was a good skier. So Mickey would take me, and I wrote it, well, I didn't go to school today, but instead I went skiing. Mickey's friends picked me up at 710 on the corner of Bundy and Coyne. Fantastic weather, only no snow. God, we drove to Moon Ridge where we spent the day on a dripping rope tow. What a fiasco. Mickey came with us. All he did was ski up and down the rope tow. He left around 4 and Mickey had some beer and we got feeling good. I snuggled close up to Mickey and it felt terrific. I think I'm sort of, really?
Kathy lived a safe, comfortable, conventional life, but she hadn't really found her people. Strange as it sounds, she felt more at home at the beach.
I did not like going to school, so I didn't really enjoy high school girly things. Had a couple of great English teachers that I remembered liking. But I didn't have a boyfriend in high school. I just always liked boys. Most of them were from the beach. I found the place that I always wanted to go to was Malibu, because I felt that I had a little community there, like Cheers. You know, everybody knows my name. Well, I got a nickname. They all called me Gidget. And so any chance I could get, I would go to the beach. And the language and the whole milieu of, you know, coming down there, carrying your board, getting to know who these, what their names were, and wanting to be part of the crew. A place to belong. I mean, you're a teenage kid. You know, we had school and we had home. And then the third place, as a sociologist would say, for me, it was the beach.
Kathy was inspired by what she saw going on around her. Inspired to surf, but also to document it.
I think the pinnacle was the guy that lived in a shack at the beach. I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting. So I thought, wow, I'd like to write a story about this guy. He lives in a shack all summer. You know, doesn't he have a mommy and daddy? You know, doesn't he have a car?
Kathy's father, Frederick Koner, was a screenwriter.
So I remember my dad would pick me up in the Dynaflow Buick, and I sat next to him in the car, and I said, I'd like to write a story about what's going on in Malibu. You tell me, I'll write the story for you. And he did. He wrote Gidget.
Kathy's memories of those days in Malibu are now part of the collective unconscious. But there's another story, one she does not like to tell, about a side of Mickey Dora and her surf friends she'd probably rather she did not know.
Small business owners, this one's for you. Chase for Business and iHeart bring you a new podcast series called The Unshakables. This one-of-a-kind series will shine the spotlight on small business owners like you who faced a do-or-die moment that ultimately made their business what it is today. Join hosts Ben Walter, CEO of Chase for Business, and Tanya Nebo, a lawyer and business consultant, on these storytelling journeys of trials, tribulations, and triumphs that hinged on a single event, a split-second decision, or even a stroke of luck. Whether the story is about a warehouse going up in flames or a former partner stealing a whole roster of clients, each episode will showcase the grit, determination, and resourcefulness a small business owner needed to turn a pivotal situation into a springboard for success. Listen to The Unshakables now and learn more at chase.com/business/podcast. Chase, make more of what's yours. Chase Mobile app is available for select mobile devices. Message and data rates may apply. J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, N.A., member FDIC. Copyright 2024, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Please, no tourists, Kahuna.
Hey, Francie's no tourist. She's got a real yen to pick up on surfing.
That Gidget?
Gidget.
Oh, hey, wait a minute, fellas. Let me on the gag, too, huh?
Well, you see, it's arrived there through osmosis. Yeah, girl and midget. A Gidget. All right.
That's a scene from the original 1959 Gidget movie. It captures the teasing Kathy endured. The playful side of it, anyway. Kathy Koner's diaries are like Kathy, full of sunshine and optimism. She loves that she is Gidget. Through Gidget, she gets to relive the thrills of her adolescence every single day.
One entry captures the language and the world of Malibu. This is from Gidget's diary. The boo, Malibu, gets good once a summer. And it got good. It got bitchin'. Brother, was I ever jazzed. I was riding four-footers and lining all the way across into the bay. Brother, was I ever stoked. It was so bitchin'. I couldn't believe it. No kooks were out in the water, and it was practically open door all the way. I took gas a couple of times, but otherwise I really looked good. Sets are coming in off the point. So consistent, I couldn't believe it. The sets were actually better formed than last year's. All the kooks stayed out of the water while the men really turned on. There must have been 50 boards in the water at 7 in the evening. Everyone from the whole coast was there. Actually, it was pretty exciting. Those bigger waves are so easy to ride, it's unbelievable. I really had a ball and looked better. I still miss having a boyfriend, but everything happens for the best. And I'll die being an old maid, but it's a grand life. And I think that's a really good piece of writing from my diary.
The Gidget story is one of triumph. A bubbly tomboy stumbles on a scene full of quirky surfer guys, falls in love, gets her heart broken, and learns to surf. It's a classic teen coming-of-age story with a refreshingly feminist take. It's a winning narrative, so powerful that it's taken Kathy most of her lifetime to awaken to some of the other dynamics that were at play in Malibu.
Well, it wasn't welcoming for me all the time. It wasn't right away, oh, she's so cute, you know, she can surf. I had to surf. I had to prove, and one of those, the photo that I think you saw me surfing, a really good one, where I'm wearing trunks. Now, those trunks, I'm aware that I wanted to look like a boy. I wanted surf trunks. You couldn't find surf trunks at Henshey's department store, Penny's department store, Miss California, or whoever made bathing suits at the time.
The guys did not accept her right away.
Well, they did haze me a bit. You know, they gave me a rough time. You know, sometimes they disconnected the distributor to my car so I couldn't go home. You know, they threw a pineapple in my face, said, you know, you're bothering me, you're still breathing.
As she revisits the diaries, she's confronted with the harshness of this treatment. Her collaborator, Ken, who's helping her transcribe the pages, is sometimes shocked by what he reads.
Ken would look at the diary pages and said, oh my God, they threw a pineapple in your face? And you just like, you know, whatever.
Mickey Dora deeply resented Gidget. Gidget the book, Gidget the movie franchise, Gidget the TV show, Gidget the cultural juggernaut. He referred to the period around when the first movie came out in 1959 as the dry rot era. he was not too charitable about Gidget the person either. Never mind that he took her to Mammoth or played ping pong at her house. This is what he wrote to a journalist who was working on a story about Kathy. Quote, "I only mumbled a few unpleasantries to her a couple of times. She was a hairy little thing for her age. She asked me some asinine question. I told her to fuck off." Unquote. Mickey's campaign against the Gidget takeover of Malibu is pretty absurd, because he was in the movie. When Hollywood producers showed up in Malibu looking to cast real surfers for the first Gidget movie, Mickey was hired to be the stunt double for James Darren, who played Gidget's love interest, Moondoggy. But you really wouldn't know that from the way he talked. A few months ago, I got a tape of Mickey Dora, recorded 2 years before his death. It's never been heard before, and I'll play more of it later. But for now, notice how worked up Mickey still is about Gidget, 40 years after the fact. He's the second voice.
I never even saw Gidget.
God.
Is it bad?
Shit.
Is it?
Disastrous. It ruined everything. And everyone holds me responsible. When people will connect me somehow, it's all lies. I had nothing to do with these people. They all hated me. Unbelievable. I only wrote Waves. You know, that's the only thing I did. It's hard, you know, hard to believe. So I get all this propaganda, bad press, and Jesus Christ.
Do you remember some of your friends, including Mickey and some others, being there and working as extras?
Mickey was the extra. He surfed for James Darren. He had great hand gestures. People mimicked him. People mimicked him a lot. And I didn't know much about what happened to Mickey after I left Malibu because he's a bad boy.
Kathy remembers one thing Mickey used to say to her all the time, the classic warning from a local to a kook to stay off his wave.
Don't drop in on me, Gidget.
Don't drop in on me.
I won't, Mickey. I won't, I promise.
Kathy went to college in Oregon, and when she came back to Malibu, a year after the movie came out, it was a different place.
When you came back here, had Malibu already changed?
Yes. When I came back, Malibu had changed. Malibu was crowded.
At Malibu, the Gidget effect was palpable. All of a sudden, there were hundreds of non-surfers in the water trying to surf, oblivious of what they were jumping into. Gidget had definitely dropped in on Mickey, metaphorically, and an army of wannabe Gidgets were doing it literally. To Malibu locals, surfing was a rite of passage, not a fad you picked up from watching a movie. Henry Ford, the early Malibu lifeguard.
You had to kind of fit into that waterman mentality. You had to be able to swim, dive, know how to read the water, read the ocean. Watermen were very important, and that's, I think, the early surfers would be termed watermen.
There was a culture clash, Henry says, between those he calls the pure surfers and the come-latelys, who had essentially been inspired by Gidget.
What's a pure surfer?
A guy who's committed to it. Whether he works or not is not that important. It's just the fact, the commitment to it. Commitment to it being a discipline, something that you believe in, something that you love. And you got to figure that on some days you're paddling out, the water's 55 degrees, maybe 58 degrees. You don't have a wetsuit. You don't have a leash. You have a 120-pound board, and you love it. And you cannot get enough of it.
Malibu was being invaded by outsiders.
When these other kids came over that just showed up and were in everybody's way, that made it difficult.
Henry was hired to work at Malibu right when the crowds were getting out of control, because the crowds were getting out of control.
We had to have somebody there to help control it, because now what was happening were people who were trying to learn how to surf join into these people who have made this their lifestyle or developed their own culture. So these people that were coming in after seeing Beach Bingo Party, Gidget, the movie,
These people are what surfers call kooks. We've talked about this word. I asked Henry to give me his definition.
It would be someone who just learning how to surf. And they called them cowboys from the other side over there on the inland side, the Valley Group. Malibu belonged to those locals. That's pretty much the name of the game. So you can imagine what it'd be like if you were down there and you were at that beach every day. Then all of a sudden there's 50 to 100 guys there with new boards and really kind of rubbing the nose of the guy who's been there for years.
So were there actual physical fights? Was it name calling? Was there just...
Oh, there was everything you could imagine. Flattened tires. If you went to a surf break and nobody knew who you were, they'd flatten your tires. There was all kinds of crazy stuff that went on. In the water was dangerous because the guys that were learning how to surf had no concept. They had no, I guess, manners. They had not been taught the culture. They had not been taught what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And there were a lot of injuries. There were a lot of people that were angry about it. And I've seen guys fight on the beach. I've seen guys throw rocks at their boards, other people's boards. I've seen all kinds of crazy stuff.
No one was more pissed off by all these kooks than Mickey Dora.
His area was invaded. That was his spot. I mean, it became a little bit more contentious. It separated the guys that could surf, who have spent their lives surfing, who invested their soul into surfing, and all of a sudden you got people coming over there and driving around with surfboards on their car saying they're surfers when they're really not. So it was hard for all of us, not just for Mickey, it was for all of us. But Mickey was probably the most outspoken.
Do you think Mickey successfully scared some of them off?
Oh, yeah, I guarantee you. I guarantee you.
Once upon a time, Mickey and Gidget had been friendly. But he turned her into a scapegoat for everything he hated about what Malibu became.
He would have been, 10 or 15 years older than her. She was really young when she was down there.
Matt Warshaw, surf historian.
You see photos of them when Kathy was still on the beach at Malibu, and they're standing sort of next to each other, sort of like a brother-sister thing almost. So there are pictures of the two of them, and there's no beef at that point. I think the beef comes later, after everybody has decided collectively that Gidget ruined surfing. And when I say Gidget, I mean the movie and the book, and then you'll follow the trail back to the person, I guess. But you're going, well, if she hadn't shown up, none of this would have happened, which is nonsense. Surfing was going to be just as crowded as it was, Gidget or no Gidget, right? But Gidget is the easiest thing to look at and say, well, there you go. That was what ruined it. And I think that's everything you need to know about why Mickey was angry at Kathy.
But because Kathy was Kathy and her family was who they were, that anger took a particularly vile form. Next time on Lost Hills.
And had there been a swastika on the driveway or no swastika on the driveway, we just kind of we kind of didn't want to deal with something like that. So we just kind of who cares? You want to throw my board over the fence? So I had a drive to want to learn how to surf, to prove it to, maybe to myself, but to the guys that I could be just one. I could surf too. I'm going to surf.
That's next in episode 4, Gidget Goes to Hollywood, part 2. Lost Hills is written and reported by me, Dana Goodyear. It's created by me and Ben Adair and produced by Western Sound and Pushkin Industries. Subscribe to Pushkin Plus and you can hear the whole season ad-free. Find Pushkin Plus on the Lost Hills show page in Apple Podcasts or at pushkin.fm/plus.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, Mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
In the 90s, New York detective Louis Scarcella locked up the worst criminals.
Putting bad guys away, there's no feeling like it.
Then jailhouse lawyers took aim, led by Derek Hamilton.
Scarcella took me to the precinct and lied.
20 men eventually walked free. Now, in the Burden podcast, after a decade of silence, Louis Scarcella finally tells his story, and so does Derek Hamilton. Listen to The Burden on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.